What's next for Greece? On today's Your Call, we'll talk about the financial and humanitarian crisis in that country. In Sunday's historic referendum, 61% of Greek voters said no to the European Union's bailout package, which included a new round of harsh budget cuts. What will that vote mean for Greece, for Europe, and for debates about austerity around the globe? If Greece exits the Eurozone, why does it matter? Whether you have personal connections to Greece or have simply been following the headlines, join the conversation and learn more after this news. Welcome. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. After almost 6 years of deepening economic depression, harsh austerity measures, and job losses, the latest round of negotiations between the new leftist government in Athens and its EU and IMF creditors came to a halt when Greek Prime Minister Alex Tsipras rejected what he called an unbearable bailout plan. On June 26th, Tsipras unexpectedly announced an emergency referendum to decide the future of the Greek nation. Did they want to accept the harsh fiscal demands of the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, together called the Troika, or to give his government a mandate to negotiate for a better deal that would take Greece out of its downward spiral of debt and austerity, with the potential that such a move could threaten Greece's place in the Eurozone? On Sunday, Greek voters gave Tsipras the mandate he was asking for with a resounding no vote to austerity and its international enforcers. That vote is a huge win for the government. But the road to economic recovery for a country of 11 million is paved with many unknowns. For the past week, Greek banks have been closed, and yet they are fast running out of cash as people have been allowed to withdraw the equivalent of $65 a day from ATM machines. Government officials estimate about $1.5 billion of cash is left. This morning, Prime Minister Tsipras briefed President Obama on Greece's position, and at this moment, Eurozone leaders are in emergency meetings about the crisis. So what explains the unraveling of the Greek economy? And what does the no vote mean for Greece, for Europe, and for us here in the United States? To talk about these issues, we are joined on the phone from New York by James Angelos. He's a freelance journalist based in Berlin who's written for a number of publications, including Foreign Affairs, The Wall Street Journal, and The Atlantic. And he's an author of the new book, The Full Catastrophe, Travels Among the New Greek Ruins. Welcome to Your Call, James.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us from London is Alex Andreou. He's an actor and a prolific writer with a background in law and economics. He's a regular contributor to The Guardian, The New Statesman, and many other British and Greek publications. He also writes for BBC Radio 4. Good to have you on the program, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And it's been just really a remarkable week for Greece, with bank closures, those lines in front of the ATM machines that a lot of people have seen on television, really the economy coming to a screeching halt leading up to this referendum on Sunday. And it was kind of a surprise because a lot of the polls were showing, actually showing the yes a little bit ahead before the vote actually took place. They proved to be totally wrong. And, you know, there was a 61% vote no in this referendum. So I want to get both James and Alex, you to weigh in. First, just to tell us, let's talk about actually what was in this referendum. What were people, at least in terms of the text of the referendum, voting for or against? And then maybe we'll talk about the more symbolic level of it, what Greeks thought they were voting for or against when they gave a yes or no to this referendum. James, why don't we start with you just talking about what was in there, in the text of it? What were they supposedly accepting or rejecting?
Well, literally, it was the referendum asked Greeks whether or not they wanted to accept the terms creditors laid out on June 25th, which were laid out in these highly technical documents that are hard for most people to understand, you know, even economists probably. So and furthermore, the actual deal was no longer valid by the time the referendum took place because the bailout had expired and the negotiations had collapsed. So really what the referendum was, as you sort of already alluded to, a symbolic vote. And I think what it amounted to was a referendum about the government itself and whether or not people supported its strategy in negotiations with the creditors, and the government clearly won.
So, Alex, describe how you'd interpret the vote. What do you think, beyond this somewhat technical language that people were responding to, what were they saying when they said yes or no to this referendum?
I would agree with James's assessment. I think the referendum was based around this sort of technical ultimatum that said this is the deal, either take it or leave it. And despite the fact that they tried to sort of soften it afterwards, at the time on Thursday the 25th, that was very much their attitude, that this is our final offer, you have to take it or leave it. And so the referendum became a sort of proxy for saying whether essentially you wanted this government to continue or not. Because what had become very, very clear from Brussels in the last few months was that they had a sort of dual focus, in my view. So part of the Brussels machine was trying to achieve some sort of agreement, and another part, probably a bigger part of the Brussels machine, was essentially hoping to overturn this leftist government and was actively working to undermine it, together with opposition parties and media within Greece. And so what the referendum became, it was essentially a question of do you want to have your leaders elected or appointed? And the result of the referendum, accordingly, I would interpret as Greece saying, this is the person we've elected, this is who you have to deal with. Stop trying to destabilize our government and try to reach an agreement.
So, Alex, you've written that you really see the approach that the European Central Bank and the rest of the Troika has taken as being really about regime change in Greece.
Yes, absolutely. This may change now because I think it has become quite clear that there's no one else to deal with. The leader of the opposition resigned in the wake of the referendum. So there really is no challenge to Tsipras' authority and mandate, I think. And I'm hoping that this will have an effect on negotiations. I know it can't actually make a difference to the deal that is being offered, to the deal that is reached. But I'm hoping that it will remove this dual focus from the game, this idea of let's try to destabilize this leftist government because it will eventually fall and then we can deal with neoliberal people that we like and actually make everyone's minds focus on the fact that these are who the parties are. You're not going to change the rest of the EU leaders in the same way that you're not going to change who Greece have elected. And they're the people that need to sit down and reach an agreement.
James, would you agree with Alex that the strategy of the EU leaders, at least those with kind of great power when it comes to financial things, was to actually try to undermine the Syriza government so it has someone it feels like it can work with?
I guess the Greek government make that, argued that with the bank closures because the European Central Bank stopped raising the liquidity assistance that Greek banks needed to keep in operation. So by not raising the liquidity assistance, that was perceived in Greece as an attempt to blackmail the result. The ECB released a statement today, the European Central Bank, just to show you their thinking, is that they are talking about moral hazard in the case of Greece. They're saying, if you want emergency liquidity assistance, we can't just provide it to you because, essentially we'll be funding your, it'll be a form of monetary policy. And that moral hazard argument is what the creditors come back with, and they say, we can't go too easy on the Greeks because then they'll everyone else
can
in Europe
can
will.
Can I say something on the on the moral hazard idea?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a serious philosophical question. Essentially, the argument goes that if there are no consequences for irresponsible borrowing, then it creates a perverse incentive to borrow money because you won't have to pay it back. So the argument goes, okay? no one that has been to Greece in the last 5 years, no one that has seen what has happened to the country, that has seen elderly people looking in bins for food, that has seen 18,000 people sleeping rough in Athens, no one can suggest that Greece thinks it got away lightly. Its reaction to a sensible agreement would be great. Let's do the same thing again. There is no moral hazard on the part of Greece. There is, however, moral hazard on the part of the lenders, I would argue, because the argument works both ways. And what has happened in Greece is that the blame for irresponsible lending, in my view, should be shared between the person that borrowed irresponsibly, but also the person that lended irresponsibly. And through this process, essentially, money has been poured down banks, which are connected to French and German banks, in order to shore them up. As far as I can see, there has been no consequences going their way. There has been no serious reform. I mean, the liquidity has been increased a little bit from 7% to 11%, but there have been essentially no serious reforms in the way money is loaned out. And so, in my view, the moral hazard is all on the side of the banks. It is the banks that are being encouraged to continue lending irresponsibly, because essentially they know but if they lend to a Eurozone country, the rest of the Eurozone countries will have to bail them out. And when we're saying bail them out, we mean bail the banks out. I think that is a very fundamental misunderstanding. Krugman posted an article quite recently in which he detailed where the money has gone from the bailout fund. And he found that less than 10% of this money has actually gone into the Greek economy. 90% of it has gone into shoring up banks. And so the bailout was not a bailout of Greece from the German taxpayer, as is the fashion to present it, but it was a bailout of banks, exactly the same way as a bailout of banks happened in the UK with Royal Bank of Scotland and Lloyds, exactly the same way as it happened in the United States.
Alex Andreou is an actor and a writer with a background in law and economics, and he's a regular contributor to The Guardian, The New Statesman, as well as many British and Greek publications. He is joining us on the line from London. Also with us today on Your Call is James Angelos. He's a freelance journalist based in Berlin who has a new book called The Full Catastrophe, Travels Among the New Greek Ruins. This is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about the crisis in Greece, both financial and humanitarian. It's really coming to a head right now following Sunday's referendum. If you've been following this story, maybe you're someone who has friends or family in Greece and you've been paying close attention to this, hearing what they're thinking. We'd love to hear your perspective. Tell us what you know. 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or maybe you just want to know how this happened. A story like this kind of comes into the headlines, but obviously it's been long in the making, and both Alex and James have the long view on these questions. If you simply want to know more, have a question that you haven't been able to get answered from the coverage you've received, the number to call, 866-798-8255. James, I want to take Alex's point, talking about, hey, you know, it's taken two sides of this relationship to get us to this point. And maybe you could talk about what you see as, you know, the kind of shared responsibility there and, you know, your coverage in your new book, The Full Catastrophe, Travels Among the New Greek Ruins, really kind of shows that cooperative effort that came to this point. So maybe you could kind of give your perspective there.
Yeah, I agree with that it is. There's dual culpability. I mean, there's the tendency to simplify these extremely complex causes of how we got here and to say, you know, the Greeks are profligates, or to say, to use these sort of cliches. But in reality, I mean, what I think has happened, I mean, it's the bailout in 2010 was sort of punitive on the Greeks. And I think the reason that the creditors came in at that point, Greece lost access to the markets. It couldn't borrow more money without paying exorbitantly high interest rates, which was just exacerbating the country's debt problems. So then you have these three institutions come in. And they were, quite frankly, they were, I think, angry. A lot of European leaders were angry at the time. And, I mean...
and what drove that anger?
There was a difference between the Greek bailout and the bailouts for, say, Ireland and Spain. In Ireland and Spain, what transpired was this private sector bubble. So you had irresponsible banks and irresponsible lending out too many loans. And then the states had to come in, and those states were relatively fiscally, especially Spain, was actually very fiscally not a big spending government, but it had to come in and bail out its banks, and then its debt went up, and then Spain all of a sudden is in trouble. So you had a bailout of the private sector. In Greece, things were different. In Greece, the government itself, up until 2009, was the primary cause. The government was taking out too many... the growth that was fueling Greece until the bailout occurred was fueled by this a lot of low-interest loans. And so the Europeans perceived sort of the sins of citizen and government, with more anger than they did of consumers and banks. And the result ultimately was the same, however. You had heavily indebted governments that needed support. And I think the punitive nature of the first bailout, essentially, which was partly driven, again, by this moral hazard theme. They didn't want to be too generous, which I agree with Alex, is foolish, especially when you want a solution to a problem. I don't think it's helpful to think in these sort of moral tones, which I think is still the tone of the discussion in the Eurozone. The punitive nature of that basically put a whole bunch of debt, unsustainable debt, on Greece, and then it started, used the leverage over Greece to push through cuts to wages and pensions and government spending that just exacerbated the economic recession. And I mean, even the International Monetary Fund has admitted that it made a mistake in how much in its failure to project how those cuts would reverberate throughout the Greek
James,
economy.
James, give us a sense. I mean, you've spent a lot of time reporting from Greece. You have family connections there. Mm-hmm. Just give us a sense of how deep these cuts go for people. I mean, I think it's very easy to kind of hear about European Central Bank this, you know, the finance minister. Yeah. Yeah. But what does it mean for people?
Average incomes in Greece have fallen by a quarter, which means that if you take GDP per head, it's fallen by about a quarter, which is a staggering number, and also the economy has contracted on a scale that is equivalent to the Great Depression in terms of its size, and it's the only difference is that it's been longer and more grinding. So, that's not a recipe. Those conditions, you know, which electorate is going to stand by and allow that to happen without ushering in a new government that they did in January with Syriza.
And Alex, James is talking about this tone, kind of moral tone of superiority on the part, I'd say, primarily if we're talking about Northern and Western Europeans towards Greeks during this crisis and, you know, as it's unfolded. I mean, talk a little bit about kind of how Greeks have been represented in this. And then, are there some connections when it comes to, you know, questions of whether the government has, you know, really been... You know, there's been a huge patronage system. There's been a lot of difficulty when it comes to simply collecting taxes, doing that kind of thing. You know, what's the relationship between that, you know, that caricature view and some reality?
Listen, there are essentially two things were going on at the same time. And one was a failure of governance in Greece. And it has been very well documented and focused on by international media. You know, we had four decades of incredible corruption. I lived in London throughout that time, but I went back and forth very regularly. And the things I saw there were really unbelievable. I opened a business with my sister at some point, and, you know, we were so determined to do everything by the book and do everything by the rules. But when you have sort of 30 people depending on you, wages-wise, and your bills are running, and the local government official is saying, I won't give you X permit unless you give me Y money in an envelope, eventually you have no choice but to join this rotten system. And that's essentially what was going on in Greece. And it was terrible. It ran the country to the ground. But what one must realize is that all of those things are why Greece ended up in the position it ended up in 2010. What made it vulnerable to the shockwaves of the global financial crisis in 2010, more so than other countries? We were essentially living in a very creaky house, but we didn't cause the earthquake. And that is an important point to note. It is an important point to note that, you know, we were affected by the same global financial crisis that affected everyone else. It's just our structures were much more badly constructed to withstand it. And so what happens from 2010 onwards is that there is essentially an incredible amount of compliance from Greece. We do what the IMF and the ECB and the European Commission want us to do. We take the medicine they prescribed, and it has a catastrophic effect. And so from 2010 onwards, I think our European partners must take part of the responsibility, because the course that they charted for Greece when they said, look, do this and everything will be all right, was wrong. It was catastrophically wrong. And so there is a breakdown of trust, not only from the European side towards Greece, because that is the part that is constantly focused on, about how much Europe distrusts Greece. But there is also a huge breakdown of trust
in the other direction.
Greek people to those institutions when they say, we did everything you said we should do, and things got significantly worse. I mean, catastrophically worse.
Alex, I want to, since you know we've got folks on the line who want to join this conversation, I want to go to one of them, but we will definitely pick up that line of discussion. We got a call from Richard in Piedmont. Richard, welcome to your call.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. So my question has to deal with the ability of the United States economy to stay buoyant in light of these catastrophic things that are happening not only in Greece, but as interconnected as global economies are. How has the United States economy been able to shield itself from the detrimental effects that are affecting Greece and other countries, with Greece being a prime example?
James, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I think in 2010, when Greece got its first bailout, Greece did present the bankrupt Greece going down in uncontrolled default at that time threatened to unravel the entire eurozone and then spread global sort of mayhem. And I think it's important to note that first bailout, it succeeded in keeping the eurozone intact in this kind of slipshod way. And I think that was the primary purpose. The sort of effect it was going to have on Greece wasn't what people in the creditors at that time were thinking about. It's true, at that time, 2010, German and French banks were heavily invested in Greece, and you have this global financial system, and there's panic already situation, and there was a fear that those banks would, you know, in a Greek default, would go under, and that would just have unknown consequences and would just keep spreading. So that was the what has happened since then, though, is that Greek government debt has gone from private hands to public hands. So now, with the emergency lenders, are essentially the creditors of eurozone nations and the IMF. And so because of that, a Greek default today, a lot of economists say, wouldn't stir the same panic in the financial markets. And you can see that the financial markets aren't reacting with the same degree of panic to the possibility of Greece going out of the eurozone as they were in previous bouts of of instability. That said,
James, if you can hold that thought right there. I'm sorry, we have to go to a break. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. Just been hearing from James Angelos. He is a Berlin-based freelance journalist who has a new book called The Full Catastrophe: Travels Among the New Greek Ruins. Also with us from London is Alex Andreo, prolific writer who often contributes to The Guardian, The New Statesman, and many other British and Greek publications. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Lots of ways to join in today's conversation on Your Call, on the phone or by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can simply leave your comment or question at the website yourcallradio.org. The toll-free number to join us live in conversation is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 o'clock, BBC and World Have Your Say. Then at noon today is John Perry and Ken Taylor and Philosophy Talk.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. You can find more information about the show at yourcallradio.org. Tomorrow, we are going to be discussing the changing economics of recycling. And on Thursday, we'll look at how the flow of global investment to the Bay Area is affecting local real estate and housing prices. And of course, on Friday, we'll have our media roundtable. Today, however, we're talking about the economic, financial, and humanitarian crisis in Greece. With us are James Angelos, author of the new book, The Full Catastrophe: Travels Among the New Greek Ruins, as well as Alex Andreo. He's an actor and prolific writer with a background in law and economics. You can see both of their work at yourcallradio.org. That's yourcallradio.org. And you can also call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. If you would like to join this conversation, whether you have personal connections to Greece and what is happening there, or you just want to know about its implications for the United States, for Europe, for the rest of the world, where these debates about austerity and who holds the power in the economy, this is not a solely Greek discussion, obviously, and we invite you to take part in it at 866-798-TALK. James Angelos, I just wanted you to wrap up your answer to Richard's question about the relationship between this crisis and the United States economy, potentially.
Yeah, so as I was saying, although the level of you know, a lot of people suggest that the level of effect, the ripple effect on the global economy is less today, I think the U.S. government is very concerned and they've been lobbying for both sides to come to an agreement and find more accommodating stance with one another. And for the euro currency itself, it could be a Greek exit can still be very damaging in that when you send the signal that euro membership is revocable, that will come back to haunt the currency next time there's another country is vulnerable the way Greece is right now.
You're talking about what people call the Grexit, the potential that Greece might actually go out of using the euro, go back to using its own currency, the drachma. I actually have a call related to that. John in San Francisco just called in. John, welcome to Your Call.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. One of the questions I have is it wise for countries like Greece and perhaps Portugal and some of the others to be a member of the euro or a part of the European Union? It seems these countries would be better off if they were just autonomous. The way the thing is set up, these countries are in a position of lacking any kind of economic autonomy, and they're subject to the demands of the great economic power in Europe. Germany, of course, sets them up to be dictated to as to what they're supposed to do. It seems these smaller countries, they don't have the financial or fiscal sophistication, budgetary controls, etc., to be part of the same union that was part of Northern Europe. And they'd be just better off not being part of the euro situation, the European Union situation.
John, thanks for the call. Let's get a response. Alex Andreo, would leaving the euro, I mean, given the Greek experience to this point, might that be a better option?
Listen, it's a It's a tough question to answer because back in 2010, I was advocating fully that Greece should leave the euro, go back to a different currency, devalue so that it would become competitive, attract more tourism. It would have been hard, but it would have begun to recover. But having gone through 5 years of absolute misery, the investment in staying in the euro has risen, if that makes sense. You know, so you think I've taken all the pain. If a resolution is somewhere around the corner, should I not hold on for it? What needs to happen, I think, and that is what's clearly appeared throughout these negotiations in the last few months, is that we need to reconfigure, I think, the way we do business in Europe. We need to step back from being rivals and trying to dictate terms to each other to a position where we're trying to find common solutions that work for everyone. To give you an example, the current government had gotten to a stage where it had pretty much accepted everything that the Europeans were demanding in broad terms. So it was saying, yes, okay, we agree that we have to raise this much tax, we agree that we have to cut this much spending, but we want the autonomy to decide how we raise tax and how we cut spending. And the Troika would intervene in an unbelievably micromanaging way to say, no, you will have X amount of value-added tax on milk. You will not tax companies 29%, but you will tax them 28%. And that level of micromanagement begins to really impinge on even a moderate level of sovereignty. And there is a huge amount of Euroscepticism around Europe at the moment, and most of it expresses itself in really quite unsavory far-right populist parties. I think this is a disastrous attitude by the European Union, to be seen to be manipulating and bullying, really, a member state in this way. I think strengthens that feeling that we cannot be sovereign, we cannot be happy and exist within this union, because it has basically gone from a partnership of equals to a gang of strong players and weak players, and the strong players will bully the weak players until they get their way.
James, I'd love to hear your thoughts about what might happen to Greece were the exit to happen, whether because it chose it or because it's forced to leave the Eurozone, and also the effect that this whole thing has had on the politics, both obviously the rise of Syriza, a left-wing party, but there have been some really powerful right-wing forces in Greece in the last few years.
Yeah, the micromanaging that Alex points out is really astounding, that you have basically technocrats from afar telling the Greek government exactly what to do. You know, shelf life of pasteurized milk, change those regulations, open up a nationwide system of cadastral offices. It's truly, if you go in and you read the bailout agreements, it's incredible the level of detail and micromanagement.
And James, if I could ask, is that different in Greece than it is in, has it been in other countries that have gotten bailouts?
Yes, I think so. And the reason is, I think there has been a deep level of distrust in the Greek government's capacity to carry out the reforms. I mean, you have to, when the creditors came in 2010, they would ask simple questions like, how many pensioners do you have? And there was no clear answer to that. How many, so the government had to do a census in order to find out how many pensioners it had. For example, the government also did a census to find out how many people and who exactly was collecting a disability benefit, which led to this absurd call for everyone who was collecting a disability benefit to report to an office in order to sort of register themselves. So what you see is this decades old system that was sort of opaque and is designed that way in order, I think, to allow graft and allow also politicians to assign to give out, you know, if you elect me, I'll do this for you. It made that political patronage system a lot easier. And so I think that reason, unfortunately, led to this micromanaging that after 5 years, I think the Greek electorate has gotten very tired of it. And what you saw in the no vote was this, from the no vote camp, was this celebration and this sense that, hey, we have a say in our future. And that was a very, you can see that the dancing in across the street from the parliament, that sort of sentiment, that catharsis brought.
And when we look at who voted on which side of this referendum, does the no vote show a lot of the kind of populist right voting no as well as the left?
Yeah, well, I mean, Syriza is in a coalition with a populist right party that you know, the only thing they have in common really is opposition to the creditors, and this party has sort of very nationalistic overtones in its rhetoric. And so this, I mean, the sense that there were the of resistance in Greece is very strong. Resistance to foreign control, and it has been under foreign control. The only way it seems that because of the impasse, the only way it seems that the Greeks will be able to determine their fate, I think, is if they leave the euro. But the problem is that would unravel potentially very dire consequences, and you know, so Greece are sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
James, we are hearing from a lot of listeners. That's James Angelos. He is a Berlin-based freelancer who's done a lot of reporting in Greece, has family there as well, and he's the author of the new book, The Full Catastrophe, Travels Among the New Greek Ruins. With us today on Your Call, discussing the Greek economic, financial, and now humanitarian crisis. Also with us on the line from London is Alex Andreou, who writes for The Guardian, The New Statesman, many other British and Greek publications, as well as BBC Radio 4. We're getting a lot of folks writing in at feedback@yourcallradio.org or joining the conversation at 866-798-8255. This is a very big day in the history of Greece, in the history of Europe as a financial union. If you have questions about what you're hearing, if you have connections to this story through family or through friends, we'd love to have you join the conversation. 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And actually, we got an email from Philip who asked, could your guest discuss the deal that Goldman Sachs did with Greece in the 90s to disguise the amount of the Greek budget deficit? And has Goldman Sachs paid any price for helping Greece with this deception? Alex, James, either you want to jump in on that?
As far as I know, Goldman Sachs not only hasn't paid any price for part in that deception, it actually got a significant bailout itself during the financial crisis. But I think to a certain extent that to be focusing on the past, to be focusing on how we got here, is not that constructive. We are where we are, and I think all parties now need to be pragmatic. The most common question I get from people on social media whenever I write about this, I'm covering the Greek crisis for an outfit called Byline.com, and the question I get most frequently is, why won't Greece just pay its debts? You know, it's outrageous that you borrowed money and now you don't want to pay it back. And I understand the question, but it implies that somewhere in Greece there's a mattress stuffed with a trillion euros that we're simply refusing to hand over because we're socialists. That's not the case. Greece cannot pay back the debt, and what's more, the IMF in its recent report a few days ago explained that Greece can never pay the debt because the debt is structured in a way that it is not viable. So it isn't a case of not wanting to pay back the money. It is a case of being unable to pay back the money. And the more you squeeze the Greek economy, the more unable we become to pay back the money. And so we need to find a pragmatic solution from where we find ourselves today. A lot of people around Europe are very angry. You know, they're saying, why should my tax be paying for Greece? But in essence, they should be angry about the agreements that have been done in the last 5 years. Those extend and pretend agreement, as they're known, that simply pour more money into a problem in order to kick a can down the road. What the current government is saying is no to more loans. It is saying let's find an agreement that is viable, that is sustainable, and that will actually resolve the problem. The International Monetary Fund has suggested that there should be a grace period of no repayments for many years, that there should be a significant haircut to the debt, and that there should be a fund made available to Greece for a sort of growth and infrastructure projects that will bring it out of this recession. Essentially, Greece will never be able to repay back any of this money if you put it in a position of a constantly contracting economy. Its economy needs to grow and heal in order for it to pay back this money. And so I think that's what the request is at the moment, to look at the big picture and say, let's not think of what's politically expedient this year or in the next 6 months, because there's an election coming up in Spain and we're terrified that another socialist party will be elected. Let's look at the big picture. Let's look at the cohesion of Europe. Let's look at the people that are suffering misery, who really caused none of this problem, and find a solution that will take Greece out of this economic misery.
Alex,
and I think that is the fiscally responsible thing.
Alex, I understand, certainly from your perspective, I'm sure James agrees, that it's, you know, things are so pressing in Greece that this is a time to talk about where to go from here. But it's also an opportunity for people who maybe aren't deep into these issues to learn about how the international financial system works. And I mean, we've gotten a number of people asking questions about the role of Goldman Sachs. I don't know if, James, if you can briefly offer any perspective on that.
There was something involved with currency swaps that allowed Greece to conceal the size, the true extent of its debt. And, you know, I'd have to go and do some research to be precise here. But I think, you know, the scale of that obfuscation was not to excuse it, but I don't think it was the sort of, you can say that was the cause of how we got here. So that's a short answer.
Great. Let's go next to Jerry in Foster City. Jerry, welcome to your call.
Yeah, hi. I haven't been hearing in these conversations anything except trying to throw a bigger hit on the poor people of Greece, who seem to have suffered the most and are perhaps a little bit complicit in some of the things that have happened. However, the rich seem to have escaped any taxation efforts. They're the ones who don't pay the taxes. A couple of years ago, I believe it was WikiLeaks, published a list of all of the holders of Swiss bank accounts, and that was given to the Greek government for them to go after all of these millionaires, multimillionaires, and billionaires who have squirreled away money without paying taxes. It's these people who are not paying their bill that is a great cause of Greece going broke. And it doesn't appear that the government, the current government, is interested in going after them either. It would seem to me that they could pretty much cure their problems by collecting the taxes that are due.
Thank you, Jay. That's a great, great question. James, what do you think?
I think one reason the previous government, the previous political order, the Greeks voted them out of office in January, was because, you have to keep in mind, the same parties that were governing, that have been governing Greece for decades, were in power until January. And one reason they've been voted out of office is because there was a real sense among Greeks that there was an inequitable approach to how the Greek government was cracking down on tax evasion. So I give this one example in my book of Greek of a tavern owner on the island of Hydra, who riot police were sort of called in to quell an uprising at this tavern because in this small idyllic town, because financial police had come in and tried to arrest the owner for not giving proper receipts. This was an effort to crack down on VAT tax, consumption tax evasion in Greece. And that spurred a huge political debate in Greece. And I remember at the time, Alexis Tsipras was in the opposition, he said, oh, well, you go after the tavern owner, but what about going after these people who have their money abroad? And a lot of those people on the Lagarde list that that your caller was referring to, you know, have connections to the government, have connections to very powerful officials, and the government, the previous government, didn't go after them, and that, I think, is why you have this sense of social injustice that was just growing. And the question is whether Syriza is going to be able to deliver on its promise to go after them. And I think, you know, it is an extremely, to be fair, it's a difficult task. And think about the situation that Syriza came into governance. I mean, it's been operating more or less in emergency mode, and it's been in power for, you know, 6 months now. To do those reforms and to find these people who put their money in foreign accounts untaxed, it's going to require a major effort, and it's going to require some political stability.
I want to take one more call before I hear both from you, James, and you, Alex, about kind of where we are at this very moment and what might be possible ways forward for Greece in the Eurozone. But let's go back next to Kathy in San Francisco.
Hi. I want to ask him about if he's listened to Bill Still and Ellen Brown from the Public Banking Institute, and they focus on North Dakota and as a public banking model for every state, and it could work in Greece and Iceland, of breaking from the private banking. The Federal Reserve is really not a government agency. It's totally private, and it owns the Congress and the oil and gas companies. So the Congress, they're really like slaves to the Federal Reserve, the private banking.
Right. So the United banks in the U.S. that is, not in Greece.
So we need more small public banks. Versus being controlled by the private banks of the bankers in the Federal Reserve, and it's modeled after the Bank of London, and the July 4th was really meant to celebrate breaking from the Bank of London.
Kathy, thank you so much for the call. Maybe James or Alex, if you could, I mean, the banking system obviously is at the heart of the current crisis, where people can't get money out because the European Central Bank won't provide additional support to Greek banks. If you could just give us a thumbnail sketch of how that system works and where the breakdown is right now, James.
Well, Greek banks are being kept alive by the European Central Bank, and in terms of the liquidity assistance, because of the uncertainty in Greece and because of the panic. And this has happened before in Greece, that it gets to the point where a lot of people are concerned that the currency, that they won't be in the euro next week. And that concern drives people to go to their banks to withdraw their euros, because what may result is a devalued currency. So that's why what you have in Greece has been a bank run that has been getting steadily more worse until just before the referendum. And at that point, the ELA, which had been raising the emergency liquidity that it provides to those banks to keep them operating with cash, said, okay, no more, we're not going to raise it anymore. So they kept it at where it is, and they're holding it at where it is. And meanwhile, they're threatening to take it away entirely, which would mean that Greek banks would collapse. And that would be very, very serious.
So as we speak, Eurozone leaders are meeting, talking about the Greek situation this morning. Tsipras, the prime minister in Greece, was on the phone with President Obama. Clearly, things are really at a head right now. What has changed since the referendum in terms of, I mean, does the Greek government have any more bargaining power? And when you look at this situation, I know, Alex, you were talking about this is time for pragmatism and a time for thinking a little bit beyond, you know, just kicking this down the road a couple more months. Where do you think that place is that where Greece could stay in the Eurozone? But also get some relief for this the pressure that this debt is placing on the economy and the devastation that it's really put on the Greek people.
First of all, there are practical things to sort out. I think bank liquidity must be restored, because what you're doing is you're paralyzing the economy. You're paralyzing the economy of a member state that is already in deep financial trouble and unable to pay back debt. It is just thoroughly unreasonable to act in the middle of the tourist season, by the way, which is, you know, the main breadwinner for the Greek economy, to act to make things significantly worse. I mean, you know, there is a microcosm of misery going on. There are people whose kids are studying abroad who can no longer send money. There are companies whose internet hosting is outside Greece and can't pay to renew their websites. You know, this is money that people have that is in their account, but they have no longer access to it. And so that, I think the first thing is for that to be restored. On the wider picture, I would argue that the referendum has changed nothing in the sense that the problem still remains to find a solution that is equitable for everyone. And at the same time, I think it has changed everything, because it has altered the framing of the debate as one of democracy against bureaucracy. And like I said, with things in Europe as they are at the moment, the way European leaders handle the situation in the next few days will make a huge difference in terms of, for instance, the British referendum of staying in the European Union or getting out of the European Union. I can't tell you how many British friends have written to me or called me in the last few days saying, I've always been a staunch supporter of the EU, but the way they have treated Greece has convinced me that Britain's future is outside the EU.
Alex,
and so there is a reputational damage that's being done that goes far beyond
Greece.
The really relatively minor amounts that would be required to provide relief and get Greece on the path to growth.
Alex, I want to get a final response from James. James, you're watching this very closely. What might be a possible path forward, and how optimistic are you?
Yeah, there's a difference between what I think should happen and what I think could happen, unfortunately. And I think that the signals from Greece's fate, unfortunately, doesn't, in terms of whether or not it will remain in the Eurozone, whether or not its economic outlook will change, whether or not banks will reopen, it largely rests in the hands of its creditors. And so entirely rests in the hands of its creditors. So it's up to them what they do. And the signals from them have not been positive. And so it's an extremely worrisome situation. Each day that passes, as Alex pointed out, with Greek banks closed, creates economic damage that is further digging this economy, which is already beleaguered, further into a hole. And it's just going to mean more years of suffering, whatever the outcome.
James Angelos, thank you so much for being with us. James is the author of the new book, Full Catastrophe, Travels Among the New Greek Ruins. Also joining us for the hour has been Alex Andreou. He is an actor and a writer with a background in law and economics. You can find both of their work at yourcallradio.org. James, Alex, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Great to have you. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. What have you always wanted to know about recycling? On the next Your Call, we'll learn about changes in the recycling industry and how they affect what happens after you toss paper and plastic in the recycling bin. Economic shifts are making recycling programs more costly for cities, and just one-third of the waste that's disposed of is recycled nationwide. What challenges are cities facing with their recycling programs, and how can they succeed today? It's Your Call with Hanna Baba and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.